The remote hearing the Capital Investment Committee for March 10th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Chair Lee.
Lee present.
Lee present. Vice Chair Murphy.
Murphy present.
Murphy present. Representative Erdahl.
Erdahl present.
Erdahl present. Representative Igbaje.
Present.
Igbaje present. Representative Berg.
Present.
Berg present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Representative Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg present. Representative Hansen, excused. Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Hewitt present. Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Lilly present. Representative Lucero.
Awesome Thursday morning.
Lucero present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Moran present. Representative Pearson. Representative Pearson. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Raleigh present. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Rasmussen present. Representative Ryer.
Ryer present.
Ryer present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. And Representative Zhang.
Present.
Zhang present. Representative Pearson. All right, Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
Quorum is present. Chair Murphy, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, March 8th? Is Chair Murphy on?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move approval of minutes of March 8th as printed.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Tuesday, March 8th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for Tuesday, March 8th are approved. Members, today we will hear economic development related and other bill presentation. As is custom, all bills will be heard on an informational basis only, with amendments offered for reference only. Please note that House File 2630 has been removed from today's agenda. Each bill presentation will be allotted 6 minutes, and we will get started with Representative Olson, House File 2836. Welcome, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Murphy, and Ranking Member Erdahl, and all of the committee members. So thank you for hearing House File 2836, which is a bonding request for the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center, also known as the DEC, which is located in my district in Duluth. The DEC is Minnesota's premier regional public event center on the shores of Lake Superior, welcoming all to one of the state's most visited and popular tourist areas. The DEC is home to the champion UMD and women and men's hockey teams and to the Team USA curling. The state, region, and city have invested to create and expand these facilities since 1966, and now key infrastructure at the DEC needs repair and improvements to extend the life of the facilities for the next generation. No new square footage will be added, only needed repairs for asset preservation and energy improvements of the DEC facility, which is a quasi-state, locally owned facility. The DEC facilities total 980,000 square feet, and these necessary upgrades will improve energy efficiency, cut utility costs, and improve critical life safety issues while preserving the investment Minnesotans have made in these unique facilities. So joining me today is Lucy Amundson, the Communications Director for the DEC.
Good morning.
Amundson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, I am Lucy Amundson. I am the Communications Director at the DEC, and I am here this morning in Daniel Hartman's stead.
Please proceed.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson Lee, and thank you, members, for letting us be here. Share my screen. All right. We definitely appreciate this time today, and I'm going to quickly go through my slides. What is the DEC? We are the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center, and we are a state authority, but really we are a regional complex that serves all of our Northland. This is probably what you think of when you see the DEC, but we're really the home of many sports, including the UMD Bulldogs, national champs, and the UMD Women's Bulldogs, which actually have won more championships than our men. We are home to the U.S. curling team, and you can see John Leinsteiner having his typical joyous face. And we have the vibrant performance halls that have double the capacity of anywhere else in our region. We also have huge expo space and manage the Bayfront Festival Park, where we work with an area group to put on a annual tribute band festival to support homeless veterans. This is Lou, who puts that on, and he is absolutely as nice as he looks. And we have many, many visiting artists that come, and we provide an opportunity for artists to sell and show their wares. And these are very well attended events. Mostly, though, the DEC is known for just bringing the crowds to the Northland that creates economic vitality throughout our region. We also own a boat, and we put on the Midwest Dog Show, which I only tell you about because the dogs are adorable. And so that is just a lot. We have close to 1 million square feet of footage here. And we are here today off cycle because we had a disaster happen. On July 14th, we had a pneumonia leak from the chiller of our North Pioneer Hall. This was actually my very first day of work. And when I asked the fire crew how can I visualize how bad of an incident this is, they told me to go watch Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark, because this is literally how devastating it is to have an event like this. It's extremely dangerous, even though that's a very flippant way to present it. This scared us at the DEC, and we did a system-wide check of our entire facility and realized we had another ammonia-based cooling system just like the one that broke, but this one is actually 10 years older than that one. Here it is. This is also our 1966 air handling system. This is an electric transformer from 1966, which was scheduled to be replaced in 1986, but we're still using. So this comes to a request of just under $8 million. And like Representative Olson said, this is not for anything, any bells or whistles or anything new. We just simply want to protect this state asset. And that is everything I have for you this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Amundson. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Olson or her testifier? Seeing none, Representative Olson, any closing comments on this bill?
No, thank you to my testifier, and thank you to the committee for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Next up is another Representative Olson bill, House File 3169. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having putting these bills together on the agenda and hearing them today. So it's no surprise that we all know childcare is an issue across our state. And so I'm bringing forward House File 3169, which appropriates general fund money into the Greater Minnesota Childcare Facilities Capital Grant Program, which was established in a previous funding bill. And so Greater Minnesota is currently short more than 40,000 childcare slots. Between 2000 and 2020, Greater Minnesota lost more than 20,000 childcare slots. And a new childcare center, as we know, is not easy to come by with more than $1 million in capital costs to build. It is difficult for providers to access capital funding, And once a provider has the capital debt, it is difficult, if not impossible, to generate enough revenue to cover both the operating expenses and the debt service. So the bill before you today provides $10 million from the general fund for the Greater Minnesota Child Facilities Capital Grant Program. The funds are available for both child care centers and providers with a family child care license. Eligible grant recipients include a city, a county, or school district, or a joint powers board established by two of the cities, counties, or school districts, and a private child care center provider licensed as a child care center or to provide in-home child care. The eligible projects could include acquiring land or an interest in land, pre-design, design, renovate, construct, furnish, and equip facilities in which to provide child care. Other child care facility improvements support the purpose of the grant program, and all projects must increase child care capacity in the communities that is served. The maximum grant is $500,000 and requires at least 50% non-state match. And so with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, which is Scott McMahon.
Mr. McMahon, please identify yourself and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Chair Lee, and members of the committee. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm the Executive Director for the Greater Minnesota Partnership. The partnership is a coalition of businesses, local governments, foundations, chambers of commerce, higher education institutions throughout Greater Minnesota who care about economic development expansion in Greater Minnesota. When you talk to our businesses and you ask them what's holding them back, either from growing their businesses or investing in their communities, you'll hear one of two answers. It's either the lack of childcare or the lack of housing in their community. And these are things that, you know, frankly, those businesses don't have control over. What we have seen in Greater Minnesota over the past 20 years is a significant departure of traditional family care providers. So think about a woman having a childcare business in her house. Over the past 20 years, we have lost over 35,000 family care slots throughout our communities. We have seen an uptick in childcare centers, but that's covered less than half of that loss. To put it in perspective, the Twin Cities has seen a similar loss of family care providers, but they've offset almost the entirety of their loss through the expansion of childcare centers. What we're seeing in Greater Minnesota is that if you can build a childcare center of 90 or 100 slots or more, you can make it finance, you can make it work financially from generating enough revenue to cover both the operation costs as well as the capital costs. Unfortunately, the vast majority of communities in Greater Minnesota cannot support a childcare center of that size. What we're looking for are childcare centers of 40 to 80 slots for that operation. And unfortunately, you simply cannot make the finances work for that business if you put in both the operating costs and the capital costs. So what this grant program would do would be allow partnerships either with communities or with providers in those communities to help build out the infrastructure that we need to provide childcare centers. So to give you some examples of projects that are in development right now, but on each of these situations, they can't go forward because they can't access the capital to make them work. So we have one community who has a facility that they can turn into a childcare center, but they need help building out the inside, the guts of that facility to actually turn it into the center. We have another community who has a recently closed down adult living center that no longer has residents in there, but they would like to turn into a childcare facility. We have another community who has a private developer looking at building a new multifamily housing unit. They would like to have a childcare center attached to that facility to support the workforce housing that will go into that facility. We have another community that recently, their Target building shut down. And so the school district purchased that Target building and has turned it into an education center. Part of that has become their childcare center. It was an existing center that sold their facility in town and moved their business into that vacant Target building. They would like to expand their space in that building, but again, they lack the capital. We have another situation where we have a childcare provider who is cohabitating with a nursing home, and there's extra space, and again, they like to expand. There's demand for the community, but they need the funds to do it. This grant program would allow every one of those projects to move forward, every one of them adding childcare capacity in communities that desperately need it. And that's just a handful of examples of things that are happening. We are seeing a lot of creativity and innovation in our communities going forward to try and figure out how do we address the childcare shortage that every one of our communities faces. But every one of those conversations ends with, we can either make the business operations work or we can make the financing work. We can't make both of them work. So this program, if funded, would allow the grants to go out to these communities to make each one of these childcare facilities a reality. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that members may have.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Olson or her testifier? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just wondering, Representative Olson, if you said this, I missed it. Who is the fiscal agent for these?
Representative Olson.
That's a great question, and I believe was this through, so we have several bills with different accounts, and I believe this one would be through deed. Is that correct, Scott? And my testifier can answer that
question. Mr. McMahon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, Representative Erdahl, yes, the money would go to deed, and it would be funded through grants through deed. This bill has the money going to deed through the general fund. You also have the ability to provide funding for this grant program through capital bonds. With the cash side of it, the grants would be eligible to go to the local government units, either cities, counties, or school districts, or with it being cash, it would be able to go directly to the childcare providers themselves. If it was funded through the GO bonds, it would only be eligible for those local governments. But a lot of those projects I just mentioned to you are local government-supported operations that would be going forward.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think you probably already have pretty much answered my follow-up in terms of, is this general funds, is this GO? As I understand what you're saying, the funding in this particular bill is general fund, but you are also leaving open the possibility of GO bonds. Is that correct?
Mr. McMahon.
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, yes. So when this body created the Greater Minnesota Child Care Facilities Grant Program in the 2020 bonding bill, the statutory language of the program was enacted. There wasn't any funding provided for the program at that time, so we haven't had this funding available. Two accounts were created at deed, one that would hold revenues from GO bonds and one that would hold revenues from the general fund. So if in the bonding bill this year, the GO side of the ledger was funded, those grants would be available for the local governments. If the cash side of the account was funded, those funds would be available for both local governments and private providers.
Representative Erdahl.
All right, thank you.
I see no other question. Representative Olson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill and considering that. And thank you to my testifier.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Next up, we will move to Chair Becker-Finn's bill, House File 2876. Welcome and proceed. And my Chair Becker-Finn, that you have the DE1 amendment to it. So if you could just explain that, that would be great. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the skate park grant program bill. So pretty straightforward. And I really do want to make sure we have most of our time for my testifiers, but there is a DE1 if members want to take a look at that. Just kind of cleaning up. So this is we've started this program and we want to keep it going. And so the DE1 add some other things so that we're making sure we have the language in the best shape that we can so that it can actually be used in an easy, accessible way for people in the communities throughout the state. So that's what the DE1 does, as well as, you know, adding some extra dollars to keep this effort going. So again, I really want to make sure we have time for my testifiers. So if we could move to the testifiers, that would be great.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. First up, I have Liam Gustafson. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, my name is Liam Gustafson. I'm 11 years old. I live in Nevis, Minnesota. I want to build a skate park in my town. I think a skate park would give kids new opportunities and give kids a new way to play. Last summer, I witnessed kids who were bored, who made poor choices, and littered in our town. A skate park would give kids a safe place to play where they won't get bored. A skate park would be something that any kid could enjoy no matter how much money they have. I enjoy going to Bemidji Skate Park a lot, but Bemidji is an hour drive away, so if I could get a skate park in Nevis, I could ride my scooter there and meet my friends. I have a lot of friends who also like to ride scooters, bikes, and skateboards. A skate park right in town would help keep business local. My friends and I could stop in Nevis and get treats from the ice cream shop or grocery store on our way to the skate park. I attended a city council meeting in December where I asked city council members if there was a space for city limits that would be available to build on. There were a couple of options, so they asked me to come back with a footprint of my proposal. If approved, I'll need to start fundraising. The average skate park size for my town costs over $200,000. Also, I'll take all the help I can get. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gustafsson, for coming by. Next up, we have Paul Forsline. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Co-Chair Murphy, and members. I'm Paul Forsline with City of Skate. We are a nonprofit Minnesota advocacy organization trying to get quality skate parks built and help kids like Liam realize the facilities that they need. I'm going to share my screen here and just show you some slides because I want you to see what we're talking about when we're talking about quality skate parks for your community. So the bill is in place, and this is an effort that began in 2017. At that time, my sons came to our local representative, Paul Thiessen, and Paul Thiessen and Tamara Tice were visionary enough to put this program in place, and we're happy that it's in place, but it's at the state now where it needs to be funded. So what we're trying to create is these multi-generational spaces for all users like Liam. We provide scooters, skateboards, any wheeled device that's not motorized, and we're trying to create these to be great community spaces, just as valued as our ice arenas, as our premier ball fields, our wellness centers, whatever's on trying to improve your communities. So this, unfortunately, is the current state of most skate parks throughout Minnesota. These were built in around the 2000s up till even this past year. They're asphalt, which is like a cheese grater on your skin if you fall down. These aren't very inviting places. They're not spaces that really utilize the potential of skateboarding in the skateboarding community. And by the way, when I say skateboarding, I'm talking about the BMX bikers, the scooter riders, all the people on wheeled activity sports. So currently, right now, here's the situation. There's 25 plus projects that are being discussed and also being advocated by kids like Liam throughout the state. Some of these projects are in community CIPs. And the problem is the funding. There's always a shortage for funding for these skate parks, and which results in, unfortunately, the previous picture, those modular units. So currently, the program's in place. It was passed in your bonding bill in October 2020. The Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission is running this. It was modeled after your Mighty Ducks program, a successful program to help communities Tara from the Amateur Sports can correct me, but I think it's been in place for well over a decade. So that's what's modeled. Unfortunately, it was only funded, you know, pennies on the dollar, $250,000. That's not even a grant for the program that we're putting forward. So what we are putting forward is a $15 million matching grant program, which would result in $30 million of capital improvement. So if you want to look at this as economic development, improving communities, there's so many different ways to look at that. This is a building bill. I mean, there's going to be $30 million of construction jobs to build these facilities as well. So, and here, I just want to get you images of skate parks, what we're talking about. This is the skate park that opened up in Des Moines, Iowa last year. It was a $6 million project. It opened in May. It was the home, the first week it was open, it was the home to the Olympic qualifiers for skateboarding. Those images you see on the bottom there are actually the medal winners in the women's competition. I just want to emphasize that skateboarding being done at a very high level by young youth. These girls are all aged 13 to 17. We're talking a 17-year-old gold medal winner there. So it's pretty amazing that the talent and and this is also showing the demand. There's this huge demand in women participating. And you need these facilities with the space and the quality to make a welcoming place for all users. Here's an example of a regional skate park. This is something that not only serves the immediate community, but also would be a draw for surrounding communities. And actually, this is something that people would travel across the state. Liam mentioned traveling to Bemidji. Kids would travel across the state to use these facilities because of their uniqueness and just the space they provide. And then lastly, these are community skate parks. Just some examples there. These are concrete, well-made parks, really valued within the community because of how well they're made and where they're placed in the community. And it shows that shows the youth that the community actually values them and their activities and their space. And again, here's just the crux of the problem. Skate parks, they're 20 or 30 year facilities. They're built correctly. They're built with concrete. The cost is all up front. Once they're built and they're built well, the management and operation of these facilities are minor. It's not like an ice arena. It's not like a premier ball field that needs to be the upkeep and constant maintenance. So the upfront investment is really the hurdle we're trying to get over. And then just lastly, here's one of the handouts that explains the programs. $8 million going to these community skate parks with grants up to $350,000, which would, that would create over 20 skate parks throughout the state. There's $4.5 million for the regional skate parks with grants up to $1 million. And then the last one is there's $2.5 million for a statewide draw, premier skate park. So, and then the last, this is in your handout. I won't go over this because I open up for questions, not take any more of your time, but this talks about some of the qualities of what a quality skate park create for your community. So thanks very much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Mrs. Forsling. Members, any questions for Representative Becker-Fenn or her testifiers? Seeing none, Representative Becker-Fenn, Chair Becker-Fenn, any closing comments?
I just thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a picture of my daughter is a skateboarder as well. And we have the resources to drive around and take her to different parks, but other kids don't. And I really want to make sure that every kid in our state has access to a good skate park. It's a great way to keep our kids busy. As Liam spoke to, it really is a place for kids to be. That's a safe community building place for them to be while also getting exercise and being outdoors. And really this next generation really loves this resource, and it can be a resource for an entire community. And we just want to make sure kids all over the state have access to these awesome parks. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And thank you to Liam. That was the first time he's ever testified, and he did an amazing job. And like I said, he lives in Nevis, so he lives in rural Minnesota in a small town, and he is doing more to promote skate parks than most adults. So thank you, Liam. That was super awesome.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Fenn, Mr. Forsling, and special thanks to Mr. Gustafson for sharing his creative skate park design and experience with us, too. Next up, we have Representative Agbaje, House File 3286. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 3286 is meant to support Art Space in its vision for the Schubert Theater, also known as the Cowell Center for the Arts in downtown Minneapolis. Art Space is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to create, foster, and preserve affordable and sustainable spaces for artists and arts organizations. Art Space works statewide in this effort, but in the metro area, Art Space through the Cowell Center delivers arts education, classes, and instruction to many school districts across the state. This bill is seeking $800,000 in GO bonds to complete its construction project that would install a separating wall between the theater and the lobby so as to provide additional security to children and families who use the theater space. The funding would also support the construction of an ADA-compliant elevator dedicated for student use. And then finally, these funds would be used to on exterior design in order to create a sense of presence and belonging in the downtown Minneapolis community. So this theater is one of the oldest continually operating theaters in the state, and this much-needed construction will allow Art Space to provide for students, families, and artists for years to come. I have two testifiers with me who can speak more to the integral role that Art Space and the Cowell Center for the Arts plays in the city of Minneapolis and in the state of Minnesota.
First up, we have Stacy Mickelson. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Stacy Mickelson. I represent Art Space Projects based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The representative alluded to the elevator and a few of the issues that are facing us at the Cowell Center. The Cowell's is a three-building complex comprised of the Hennepin Center for the Arts or the Historic Masonic Temple, as people may know it, the large eight-story building on 6th and Hennepin. There's a new building that's an atrium link building between it and the Schubert Theater that was moved. The issue is that as we have been in development now for in operation for the last 10, 11 years, we have understood our audiences a little bit better, and there is no there is no elevator in the atrium or the Schubert Theater side of our building complex. So when a patron who needs to get to the grand tier, which is kind of the second level, they have to go over into the Hennepin Center for the Arts. They have to take that elevator up to the second floor. They have to snake their way through that second floor, through the Target Education Studio, and then make their way into the upper lobby to then find their seat. That is a very cumbersome process. It's not intuitive, and it's a rather burdensome thing to expect somebody who maybe has a disability to go through all of those extra steps, or maybe somebody who's elderly, to make them do all of that extra walking. And so we have come up with this idea to build a an elevator that will then now be centered in the atrium, that will link it directly against the back wall of the Target Studio. We'll build a separate vestibule so that there'll be no disruption to any classes or any kind of activity that's going on in that studio, and patrons can get in and out quite easily with this new design. It also allows us to kind of secure the two buildings away from each other, so the atrium then could be essentially locked off from the Hennepin Center for the Arts, where there are young people attending classes and rehearsals into the evening. And this allows for no commingling of any of those kinds of audiences. It keeps those young people very secure, which is a concern for parents who are dropping their kids off downtown. You know, how secure are they going to be in the building? And so this will allow them to kind of be contained into one area where they can be watched through closed circuit security cameras and an attendant that is sitting at the desk there. So we think this is a really positive solution to getting this. And I will stand for any questions if anyone had a question.
Representative Ajay, is this it for your testifier, or do you have a Jesse Fett to
go to? Nope. She's not here today. Nope.
Okay. So, yeah, it'll just be Mr. Mickelson.
Just me. Just
members, any questions for Representative Ajay or her testifier? Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question is to the bill author. On the exterior, I can't remember the exact language, but it was something to the effect of attempting to achieve a sense of belonging and acceptance within the community. The question is, how do we know that that's achieved? Who decides that? And will taxpayers who, if this bill is funded by taxpayers, have the ability to decide if they accept or reject whatever that standard is?
Representative Ajay or Mr. Mickelson?
I'll take a first stab, and then if Mr. Mickelson wants to add on. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lucero. I mean, this is essentially about creating spaces across all of our communities that everyone feels welcome, everyone can come and use the space, and there's no sense of kind of distance in that space. And so the purpose of this funding is really to continue to enhance the Cole Center and making sure that it's a place that's thriving and viable for people who want to come and learn and see dance performances, and adding to all the things that the center does in the city and for the state of Minnesota. I'll leave it to Mr. Mickelson if he wants to add now.
Mr. Mickelson, anything to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative. Yeah, to dive a little bit deeper on that, currently out on the Hennepin side, the front side of the Schubert Theater, there are four doors that were existing doors that when we did the initial build out, the audience flow was not through any of those doors. Those were only going to be used as fire egress. But what we've learned now in the 10 years is that they're steel paneled doors, and so there's no glass on any of those, and it makes the theater appear as though it is shuttered and not operational. And what that does is it sends a couple of signals. A signal that the Hennepin Theater District isn't as vibrant as it really is. And so we want to do our part to make sure that we help tell that story of that important cultural asset on that important street. The other piece is that there is a security issue. Underneath the large dark awning that hangs over the historic awning that hangs over the sidewalk, you can imagine with the, there aren't as good of lights there now. And so we're hoping to enhance the lighting. And then by putting in glass panel doors that are historic in nature, or that, you know, lend themselves to being historic, we believe that we can achieve some greater security under the awning. There is a bus stop that is right there, and some folks maybe don't feel always so safe there because there are things that are happening underneath that awning that we know of that we don't like. And we think this is just a way to be better policemen of our building and to make sure that everybody feels safe. But also we want to make sure that it looks like it's alive and that folks who are walking by who are curious feel welcome, that they can come in and ask questions and see what we are all about. That's really what that is.
Thank you, Mr. Mickelson. Representative Bajaj, any quick closing comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee for hearing us on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Bajaj. Next up, we have Chair Schultz, House File 2680. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members of the committee. House File 2680 would appropriate $7.5 million from the general fund to deed for the restoration and renovation of our historic Duluth Armory building. This historic building has sat empty and unused for decades, and it is very exciting that there is now a development agreement to restore the armory into an economic, community, and cultural hub for the east side of Duluth and northern Minnesota, an area that would really benefit from economic development. The new armory will honor its past as a military and entertainment hub while really becoming a centerpiece of the region. For example, the drill hall that was once used for military training will become the centerpiece of a vibrant, mixed-use commercial space with a public marketplace filled with a variety of small businesses. This will create opportunities for entrepreneurs who may not be able to afford retail space. It will be used as a music venue, and it will house artists, business, it will incubate businesses, it will be a food hall, and much more. The project enjoys strong support from the area and region, and in your packets, you have a project fact sheet that includes a list of regional and community supporters, as well as a list of artists and musicians from around the country who support the Armory Project. And Mr. Chair, I do have one testifier with us today.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. Director Poirier, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mark Poirier, and I'm the Executive Director of the Armory Arts and Music Center. And we're a nonprofit that was formed 20 years ago in 2002, and we acquired the Armory in 2003. And since that time, we've invested over $4 million to stabilize the building and make it ready for redevelopment. And I'm going to share a screen here. And here's some images. On the upper left, you'll see actually from a postcard from after the Armory was completed. And on the right, you'll see an architectural rendering of what the Armory will look like. It's really basically very similar. And across the middle, you'll see a number of architectural renderings showing some of those interior spaces, including that food hall, public marketplace for startup entrepreneurs, our North Country Creative Center Museum, our restored historic stage image. You know, we can see the balcony looking down onto the floor in that historic stage. And on the right side, the Music Resource Center, that's an after-school music program we've operated for almost 10 or 11 years now. And then across the bottom, you actually see some of the artists that we currently provide studio space for in a small adjacent building to the Armory. And our goal is to take all of those artists and move them to the Armory once that is completed. So some backgrounds on the building for context. The Armory was built in 1915 for the Minnesota National Guard and Naval Militia. It served as a training center for soldiers and sailors who fought in World War I, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. Included in those units was 125th Field Artillery, who went on to see more consecutive days of combat than any other unit in World War II. The Armory also served for decades as a center for community events and gatherings. There were car shows and home shows, basketball games and boxing matches, concerts and dances. The icons such as Johnny Cash and Patsy Cline and Louis Armstrong performed there, as did Buddy Holly on his third to last show before the fateful plane crash that took his life. And of course, A young Bob Dylan was at that Buddy Holly concert, and it changed the course of his life in American popular music. Well, I could speak for hours about the history, but since we have only a couple of minutes, let's talk about the future. We have entered into a partnership with George Sherman and Associates to rehabilitate the historic building. This is a cooperative agreement, and we're going to honor the rich history while updating the armory and reimagining it for future generations. Under the partnership agreement, the building will be redeveloped as an important community space with a focus on economic and entrepreneurial development, arts and culture, and as a place where history comes alive. Features in the renovated armory will include a vibrant mixed-use commercial space, the restoration of the historic stage, a community kitchen, and exhibit spaces celebrating the cultural and military significance of the armory. The building will house the North Country Creative Center, an exhibit space that will celebrate the creative spark of the entertainers who were there, including a permanent exhibit dedicated to Duluth native Bob Dylan, showcasing his ties to the Armory, Duluth, and Hibbing. Our Music Resource Center, an 11-year-old after-school music education program for teens, will be housed there as well. And we are also working with the Minnesota Military Museum to tell the stories of the men and women of the Northland who passed through these halls while serving our country. In all, this is a $25 million project, and we are pulling together a combination of funding sources, including new market tax credits, state and federal historic tax credits, and grants. A key part of the funding for the project is House File 2680. This $7.5 million allocation from the state, combined with our other funding sources, will make the vision a reality. As Representative Schultz said, the project enjoys strong support from key partners in the city and region, including military organizations, businesses, community leaders, and the arts. For too long, the historic Duluth Army has sat vacant. With your support, we will create a special place that Minnesotans will be proud of. Thank you so much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Poirier. Chair Schultz, seeing no questions, any closing comments?
No, I just want to thank my testifier and thank the members of the committee for the opportunity to present this really incredible project.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. Next up, we have Representative Kreshaw, House File 2672. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill I have today, I have with me Randall Dietrich, who I want to give him the most time. So, Mr. Dietrich, I'm going to turn it right over to you.
Welcome, Mr. Dietrich. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Lee. My name is Randall Dietrich. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. I am joined this morning by Bill Straczynski, board member, Vietnam veteran, and volunteer in this cause. The Minnesota Veterans Affairs, Department of Veterans Affairs and Military Affairs will both benefit from and are committed to this project. After all, Minnesota is home to more than 300,000 veterans. As several of you already know our story, I appreciate the work of Jenny Nash and Representative Murphy to include us in the bonding tour stop back in September of 2019. But to be sure, a lot has happened since then. The State Design Review Board selected HGA as our architects, and the construction project is managed by the Department of Military Affairs. Having received those funds of $13 million and then coupled with an additional $1.8 million from other sources, we had confidently moved forward with an estimated construction cost of $329 per square foot. Now, having completed the pre-design phase amidst the pandemic and the rapidly increasing costs, we find ourselves at a crossroads. Bill and I are here today to ask you for your support of House File 2672 to complete the work we've begun. In fact, there is strong support for 2672 as evidenced by these two resolutions on your screen, as well as the PDF provided to all the members of the committee, reflecting a diversity of support amongst groups, most especially perhaps the Commander's Task Force. And all of the organizations that they do represent. We appreciate their support for this bill. And to be sure, word of plans for a new military and veterans museum has spread and served as a catalyst for our efforts. Veterans have been voting with their feet for decades, providing us their artifacts, and we are trying to be stewards of those artifacts for many, many years. But with word getting out of our plans for a new facility, enabled by that $13 million, incredibly, Minnesota families, including Medal of Honor recipients, have stepped forward and donated their medals that we look forward to displaying in this new facility. It's an incredible, generous gift that we want to be good stewards of. We've been mobilized in some ways. We are gotten to work restoring World War II era tanks, which are very important to the stories of Minnesotans who served during that period of time. Huey helicopters from the Vietnam era are also being painted and restored as we speak. So work is underway. Probably the biggest example of the work underway is our cooperation with Governor Walz to reach out to the U.S. Navy to recover part of Minnesota in naval history. This is a depiction of the USS Minneapolis St. Paul, and we're happy to be working with the governor's office to bring back a portion of that decommissioned submarine that will be on display on our new grounds. So a lot of work has already been underway. There's momentum for this project, and wanted to share with you a few renderings from HGA, our architects. The site plan illustrates the prominent location of our facility along Highway 371 on the bottom of the screen, and at the top of the screen, the State Veterans Cemetery. Just beyond the Veterans Cemetery is the Mississippi River and the familiar entrance to Camp Ripley. The floor plan for our site, from day one, our single story design had a simple rectangular footprint measuring 248 by 160 to be built with prefabricated concrete. And this is consistent with an affordable kind of no-frills approach of DMA, Department of Military Affairs, about how they build buildings. House file 2672 is a $10 million request to augment the earlier $13 million that would have been sufficient before the pandemic-related inflation that we've all been feeling. To make this point more clear, consider this just completed division headquarters in Arden Hills. I believe it serves as the best available apples-to-apples comparison. It informed our thinking because the projects are so similar. It was completed early last year by that same Department of Military Affairs at a cost of $275 a square foot. Having attended the groundbreaking in 2018 and toured the construction site back in 2020, I would have been thrilled with this quality of construction for our museum. This comparable project was the basis for our earlier $13 million bonding request. Coupled with those additional funds I mentioned, our price per square foot reached a very reasonable $329, especially in comparison or when considered with the $275 estimate or cost for the building that you see. We are fortunate in that the same dogged, detail-driven project manager for this Arden Hills site is now managing our museum project. However, having spent the last year in pre-design, our price per square foot has steadily risen from $329 to $560. This resulting from a $7 million increase in direct construction costs. It is when this $7 million is paired with the requisite fees and contingencies that accompany all construction projects like this that we arrive at the needed $10,070,000 you see in the lower right of your screen. It is sobering for sure, but when compared to the other DMA project, it is a clear example of how much conditions have quickly changed and costs have dramatically increased. Like every construction project, we've addressed design challenges. These include a location separated from the rest of the Camp Ripley infrastructure by the Mississippi River. We've opted to locate some HVAC systems overhead to maximize available floor space for galleries and classrooms. And the facility will employ sustainability aspects to achieve established sustainable buildings 2030 construction standards, something that Commissioner Larry Herkey from MDVA, who was a board member, is always quick to remind me of to support Minnesotans moving forward. Finally, I would just cite that this new location In addition to serving veterans and the numerous families who have veterans who had served in the Civil War, World War II, and Vietnam, will also serve as a primary point of entry to the expanse of 53,000 acres that lies just beyond, and all the important work that goes on there, including that of the National Guard, the DNR, the State Patrol, MnDOT, and others. Please adopt House File 2672. I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dietrich. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Dietrich, just wondering, okay, $13 million was appropriated in 2020. Has any, is this all been just on design and pre-design, or have you started any construction yet?
Mr. Dietrich.
Chair Lee and Representative Erdahl, thank you.
Indeed, I think I
can. Yep, no construction has begun at this point. This has all been pre-design work, and I would just stress that, you know, the size and scope of what we envisioned and shared with you back in 2019 hasn't changed. It's that same building. In this case, the cost increase is again, due primarily to inflation.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Dietrich. And I'm not suggesting that more funding can't be made available to you, but worst case scenario, if it wasn't, what would you be able to do something with the 13 million? What would you do? What would you cut back?
Yes, Chair Lee and Representative Erdahl, you know, hearing from the board, the decision that they had made was that they did not want to reduce the size of the building if that were to be the case. Their commitment, I believe, is that this is our one chance for the state of Minnesota to design and build a building dedicated to veterans from the ground up. It's the one time in state history that we will have done this. And to do it right and to not cut those corners and skimp on the kind of classroom spaces and theaters and galleries that our veterans deserve.
Last follow-up, Representative Erdahl.
I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Quick closing comments, Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would just add this. When we first went into this project, I asked Mr. Dietrich and his team to sharpen their pencils as much as they could. I knew this was going to be a tough fight amongst all the things that we compete for. What we couldn't anticipate in all of their accuracy and planning was what this inflation has done to us and what it would do to this project. And so, Representative Erdahl, I appreciate your questions. And what I would just iterate is what we have put forward and the possibilities of what this will become as we look back on this years and generations from now, it would be unacceptable for us to let this fall by the wayside and just cut corners when we have the ability to do it right. And so I'm asking you, I'm almost pleading you to consider the ramifications of not doing this right. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Kreshaw, and then members presenting. Just wanted to ask you to limit your opening remarks so that your testifiers could go on. We're a little bit behind on time. Next up is Representative Tice, House File 2807. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Lee Erdahl and members. It is my honor, and I'll just go right to having our testifiers start. And I believe Shauna Johnson and Mayor Miller are around.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Ms. Johnson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Shauna Johnson, and I am the city administrator for the city of Waite Park. And thank you, members of the committee, for allowing to hear our bill today. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. And as I do that, I'm also wanting to just introduce our Mayor Miller. He is also with me this morning, but I will be the one that'll provide you the information. And if you have any follow-up questions, he's certainly happy to answer any of those on behalf of the city as well. So what you have before you here is a project that has already had its first phase completed. And it's a former transformer quarry that is a 22-acre site that was an old abandoned quarry site. This particular property was donated to the city of Waite Park several years ago. We've actually worked on this project for about 8 years now, and the first phase of this was completed. We did receive our first bonding request related to this was in 2018. And in that time, it was a $10 million project, $5 million from the state of Minnesota in bonding, and $5 million was a match for the city of Waite Park. So this has been an amazing project for us. What we have done with this particular piece of property is made a 5,000-seat outdoor amphitheater. And if any of you are not familiar with the city of Waite Park, just as a point of reference, the city of Waite Park is in the St. Cloud metropolitan area. Our population is around 8,800 with a daytime population of over 30,000. We have a large commercial base that provides a lot of traffic. So we have a lot of shopping and retail centers as well that make up that. And of our population as well, I just might add, is that we're very diverse, which is maybe a little bit different than most cities in greater Minnesota, where over 20% of our population is African American and an additional 5% of other minorities. So it's a very unique community, one that's probably different than most throughout the state. So we constructed this. This facility was opened up July of 2021. And this is a picture from one of the events that we had. Certainly our COVID certainly placed some potential challenges for us, but nonetheless, we were able to open up. And so Transformer Quarry truly has been transformed. Last year, starting in the middle of July, we had already had over 17,000 visitors. So what kinds of things do we do here? We have been able to work with a management company out of Kansas City that has brought in some national acts. And last year, we had, as just our first flush at it, we had the Rock Gods, which is an 80s tribute band. Our Great Theater, which is a local theater company, produced Cinderella. We had Willie Nelson. We had the Beach Boys. We also had the Dropkick Murphys and 311. In addition to that, we had some other local community events. And so our real focus with this is really we tried to create a facility that really preserved the natural characteristics of the site. And then in addition to that, really provide us a lot of flexibility to do a lot of different types of events. This year, we hope to be bringing in some more of our community events as well. We have looked at planning an Oktoberfest in this next year. We also want to do a taste of Central Minnesota with some music and food options, as well as bringing in about 12 to 15 national acts. It's kind of exciting for us because the acts that have been announced so far, a lot of them are already sold out. And some of those acts that are planned already and still more to be announced is Aaron Lewis, the Turnpike Troubadours, Bonnie Raitt, and then Great Theater's coming back and going to be performing Grease, and then the Goo Goo Dolls. So very exciting for the city of Waite Park. We've had a lot of positive feedback, even from the Star Tribune, as you can see, where this is viewed as Minnesota's top new music venue. And so we're very proud of what we've been able to accomplish. In addition, just want to mention, we do have walking trails and natural pocket parks on the other side of the quarries that create a natural park feature as well that are open to the public. So one might ask, well, what's next and why are you here today? And really the reason why we're here is simply just because we need to finish what we've started. And so as we look to our future, one of the things that we have that's an opportunity right now for us is this land purchase parking lot that you see on this map is an adjacent piece of property that has become available for sale. Currently, the city does have a purchase agreement on this site that is set to expire. We have an opportunity. The individual that we negotiated this with has unfortunately since passed away. And so some of this urgency and the reason why we're back here today is for this reason, is we're really hoping to address the parking. Our first phase, while it's a beautiful facility, we do have some pieces of it that weren't able to be finished. And a lot of that
can
just...
Can I have you wrap up, please?
Sure. That came down to cost. And so what you have before you is a request to allow us to be able to continue what we started and look at purchasing the land that's adjacent to this for parking, making the parking improvements. And then going in addition to that, we want to add a second concession and restroom facility that we were unable to do with our first phase as planned, simply given the costs, and then finishing off the parking and paving and lighting along the outside part of this perimeter. So this is just a breakdown of the cost of phase one and phase two, the total project, our local matches, and what our request would be from this. I just want to add quickly, we believe that this project has about an $8 to $10 million economic annual impact to the St. Cloud region. And I'm really excited, and I really appreciate the commitment that you've already provided, and I hope that you'll consider being a partner with us in this request today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Representative Tice, any quick closing comments?
No, I just appreciate your support, and thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Next up, we have Representative Albright, House File 2913. Please proceed. Representative Albright, you're on mute right now.
My apologies. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 2913, a bill that would allow ArtSpace to continue their innovative work in supporting and revitalizing the creative arts economy in Minnesota by redevelopment of the Northrop King Building in Northeast Minneapolis. ArtSpace is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to create, foster, and preserve affordable and sustainable space for artists and art organizations. ArtSpace has succeeded in this using real estate development as a way to build or restore places for artists who live and work. Artists' contributions to Minnesota have statewide reach and impact with venues and projects in Crow Wing County, Otter Tail County, and St. Louis County, in addition to many more in the metro area. In addition, as you've heard this morning, ArtSpace through the Cole Center delivers art education classes and instruction to many school districts across the state. ArtSpace's vision to transform the Northrop King site will preserve studio space for over 350 artists that currently work there and activate over 100,000 square feet of space dedicated to the creative sector. With that, I'd like to introduce Stacy Mickelson, Vice President of Government Relations at ArtSpace, and Becky Carlson St. Clair, Director of Property Development at ArtSpace. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome back, Mr. Mickelson. Please be concise with your remarks. Please proceed.
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Albright. There is so much good information in the sheets of that we submitted to the committee, and I would encourage you to review those. I will highlight, though, that there are about six different goals that we wanted to achieve with the acquisition of the Northrop King campus, and that was one, to preserve and stabilize the artist community that was already there. There were over 350 artists occupying that space currently, or when we purchased it a couple of years ago, and we were all very fearful of its acquisition by somebody else who would displace those artists and break apart that community. It's an important cultural asset to the state of Minnesota. It's, even though it's real estate, it's in Minneapolis. The second was to improve and enhance the overall kind of site infrastructure, the parking lot, the grading, some paving. There's no stormwater management to speak of, and there were some soil corrections that needed to happen and some other stuff that will make the site just better. We wanted to decrease the isolation of the site. It's bordered by a couple of railroad tracks and a setback off of Central and Broadway, and it isn't terribly easy to find. And so we are working to create greater connectivity to bike trails and to walking paths. We're reimagining street access from Monroe, which is on the western boundary, Broadway to the south boundary, and Central Avenue on the eastern boundary. And the exciting thing about this, the central conversation that's emerging is some folks are even beginning to think about the bus rapid transit that will run down Central and how to tie in our site to some of that to make sure that we are adding value to your investments. We wanted to increase the city's affordable housing stock, and so we are adding 84 units of affordable live workspace at 60% of AMI or below. We wanted to increase manufacturing and fabrication space with additional maker space and studio spaces in the non-residential portions of the campus. Historic preservation was important to us as well. This is an iconic industrial complex that shaped the agriculture across the state and region nationally and even globally. And so we wanted to make sure that we preserved it for the next century. And then lastly, we see an opportunity here at ArtSpace to increase opportunities for communities of color and for artists of color to make sure that they're invited and know about the opportunities here and have a way to share their art making and increase the visibility of those art forms and cultures. With that, I will ask answer any questions if anybody had one.
Nicholson, can you please identify yourself for the record again?
I'm sorry. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. My name is Stacy Mickelson. I represent ArtSpace Projects based in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to quickly thank ArtSpace for the work that they do, especially in greater Minnesota. We've been very fortunate to have them make substantial investments in Otter Tail County, including saving a historic building in downtown Fergus Falls that's really helped our area become an arts hub throughout the state. And so just wanted to recognize that ArtSpace does work across the state, especially in greater Minnesota. So appreciate all their work in the communities that they impact.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Representative Albright, any closing comments?
Brevity is my friend, Mr. Chair. Get on with business.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Next up, we have Representative Frederick, House File 3516. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. House File 3516 is for a regional water resource recovery facility, which is just a fancy way of saying they treat wastewater. This facility is located in Mankato, Minnesota, and I would like to thank the committee members that toured it last year. This facility is not just a Mankato asset. It treats wastewater for the city of Mankato, North Mankato, Eagle Lake, Skyline, the community out in Lake Washington, and potentially, if this project is funded, the city of Lake Crystal. Right now, the city of Lake Crystal has historically not been able to always treat all of their wastewater and have had to dump wastewater in the river. Mankato, unfortunately, is potentially at a similar situation if their digesters fail. The engineers do not have confidence that these digesters are gonna last that much longer, putting Mankato in a similar position to Lake Crystal, where the only option would be to have to dump the wastewater treated there into the river as well. So from an environmental perspective, this project makes a lot of sense. Let's keep our waters clean. From a financial perspective, if we can fund this project, the city of Lake Crystal is looking to tie into this facility as well, which would save them and potentially taxpayers tens of millions of dollars, because it's going to be a heck of a lot cheaper to tie Lake Crystal into this facility than have them create their own waste treatment facility there as well. And the need is now. Since this committee toured the project last year, the city of Mankato has been moving forward and trying to keep this project moving because, as I said, this project needs to get funded now. Unfortunately, they got quotes back in 2020. They're starting to get bids on it this year. Bids came up a lot higher than those quotes did, and they are asking that the legislature step forward and help with funding this project for on many different levels of need. And at this point, I'll turn it over to Testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Arns, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Susan Arntz, and I serve as the city manager for the city of Mankato. Representative Frederick did a very good job of giving you an overview of the project in general. At the beginning of February of 2021, we did open bids on this project, and we're one of the first large projects in Minnesota to do that. Our project came in with three bids that were very close and resulted in a $65 million project. It's more than a 50% increase in the anticipated construction costs for this project. As Representative Frederick indicated, I'm sharing a screen that shows the area that is showing the area that our facility serves. As you can see, we have six communities in addition to the city of Mankato that we serve. Our territory and our region, this project serves actually a much broader aspect than just the greater Mankato region. It actually goes further out to the west side of the state of Minnesota. If you look on the southwest side of this map, we also share the space with the or potential for the city of Lake Crystal. As Representative Frederick indicated, we have been in conversations since last year with the city of Lake Crystal about their wastewater future. They are continuing some of their community engagement through the month of March and have a strong interest in being able to connect to our system. Without making the improvements that we're talking about at this facility, we will not be able to partner with them to remove their significant future capital improvement projects. All of the communities that you see and the businesses you see on this map that we either provide wastewater to or phosphorus trading grants to, all of them without this project and this improvement will have significant financial improvements across the state for their wastewater needs as it relates to this facility. I recognize that you have many projects that you want to hear today. I'm happy to answer any questions. Our city engineer is also here, sitting to my right, and can help with any questions that maybe I can't touch.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question. Did I hear that the bids came in 55.0% higher than expected?
Yes. Ms. Arns.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, she's I heard the answer, yes. Yeah, okay, just a quick comment to that. It's very frustrating to me, Mr. Chair, that, again, just a quick commentary, as I've said on the House floor multiple times, due to the Biden inflation that is driving prices up for hardworking taxpayers, they're now being faced with a situation where they, in addition to being crushed with increasing prices, having to fund this, again, as a direct result of the Biden inflation. Just very frustrating. Thank you.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The need for this project doesn't have anything to do with inflationary costs. It has to do with needing to have clean water. And clean water has nothing to do with party lines at all. It has to do with everyone wanting to be able to have a safe place to live, have clean drinking water. And I would ask the committee to please fund this, both from an environmental perspective. We don't want to have to dump our wastewater in the river. And we just want to be able to save the taxpayer dollars as much as we can by not having to have other communities that could tie into this have to have their own treatment centers as well. So it makes a financial impact as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. Next up, Representative Schumacher, House File 3714. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present today. This is Lewis and Clark, second connection for the city of Laverne. I'll turn it right over to Laverne Mayor Pat Boston and Troy Larson from the Lewis and Clark Water Systems.
Mr. Mayor, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee. I'm Mayor Pat Washington from the City of Laverne, and I have with me the Executive Director from Lewis and Clark Regional Water System. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing us this morning. We have emailed out all the slides, but I'll have our city clerk bring up the slides so you can also see them on your screen. All right, I'll turn over for the first few slides to Troy Larson, the Executive Director of Lewis and Clark.
Good morning, Troy Larson, Executive Director of Lewis and Clark Regional Water. For those of you who were in Laverne this past fall, you've heard this, but just a quick reminder about what the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System is. It's a wholesale provider of water to 20 cities and rural water systems in Minnesota, Iowa, and South Dakota. We do not hook up homes and businesses. We just are a wholesale provider of water to these member cities and rural water systems. In Minnesota, that includes Laverne, Worthington, Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water, and Rock County Rural Water. And we are approximately 86% complete. Construction started way back in 2004, so we've been at this quite a while. Funding for this project is 80% from the federal government, 10% from the three states, and 10% from the 20 members. And so this is just a footprint of Lewis and Clark. If you go to the next slide, I want to show you this because if you look at the previous map, it just shows Rock and Nobles County. But this actually is the service area for Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water, which goes significantly more to the north. And so I just show this so that you know that Lewis and Clark impacts far more than just Rock and Nobles County. It's a 10-county area in southwest Minnesota that Lewis and Clark benefits. So that's just a quick recap of what Lewis and Clark is, and I will turn it over to the mayor with regard to the second connection.
All right, Mayor. Chair Lee and members of the committee. As you can see on the slide here, this is our south water treatment facility. Prior to connecting up to Lewis and Clark Water approximately 6 years ago, we had done over $1 million of retrofitting into this treatment plant, changed out the media bed, changed out some filtration equipment. After we reached connection to Lewis and Clark, we idled this plant because of the infrastructure within Luverne did not allow the cross transfer over. This is on the south side of I-90, and our main water treatment plant is on the north side. So the infrastructure is not there to transport the total volume of gallons that we need in our community every day. What this second connection would be connecting to our south treatment plant and be able to blend in Lewis and Clark treated water into our treated water from our wells in our south well field. This will give us a capacity of an additional 400,000 gallons a day out of our south treatment plant, in addition to connecting into the Lewis and Clark regional water system of our daily authorization of 820,000 gallons a day. We have industry coming on in our industrial park to the tune of roughly $75 to $80 million over the next 2 years that we'll be drawing on our water base. Next slide, please. This is the another ground floor of our picture of our south treatment plant with a 100,000-gallon freshwater tank behind it. Next slide, please. Here's the proposed route. We'd be looking at roughly 3 miles of 14-inch PVC water line connecting in from on the bottom of the screen into the vault of Lewis and Clark water system that goes down the main route there. Comes up 3 miles up to our south treatment plant. It would be in the existing right-of-way where we already have Rock County Rural Water pipelines in the ditch. We would parallel right with them. Here's a picture of our Lewis and Clark water connection up on our main water treatment facility up in the city of Luverne. This is where the first connection connects into it. We blend in right currently 60% Lewis and Clark water into 40% local. The history of Luverne is in Rock County. We're one of only two communities in the state, counties in the state that don't have a natural lake. We sit in a bed of quartzite rock, and below that, we live in it. There's a clay bowl, high iron, high manganese. So this treated water that we receive from Lewis and Clark is a huge attribute for economic development within our community and our county. The cost summary for this. Roughly $3 million, the construction cost $2.5 million, as you can see, the engineering and admin, $375,000 in contingency of 5%, with a rough cost of $3 million. Prevailing wage rate has already been added into this estimate. So as Representative Schumacher has briefed and members of the committee have toured, we're asking for 50% of this in the bonding bill. And I'm open for questions from the committee and the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Representative Schumacher, see no question. Any quick closing comments?
Yeah, I would just thank the committee again for its time today. The projects, the first round of it has been reimbursed by the federal government, and so I think that was something that we weren't really expecting. And also, I think the first time that this last time that the bonding committee had offered funds for Lewis and Clark, that there still is some money on the bottom line from that appropriation that would fill in great for this program. So thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. Next on the agenda is House File 3234. And members, similar to the last bill, we did see this on tour, but my understanding is that the project has changed significantly, and so that's why we're bringing it back for a hearing. Vice Chair John, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. And committee members for allowing me to present today. House File 3234 is an important bill to the city of St. Paul, in particular to the east side. The Port Authority has purchased the former Hillcrest Golf site with the intention of cleaning up the contaminated land and turning it into a development site with housing, jobs, and parks, and the goal of being carbon-free community. This is a $12 million request for site analysis, planning design, engineering, and the Port Authority will be matching the $12 million. I'm excited to be carrying this bill, and I cannot wait for the transformation that it's going to happen once the project gets started. I'd like to draw your attention to four letters of support from the International Union of Operating Engineers, LIUNA of Minnesota and North Dakota, the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council, and the Carpenters Union. Today I have the Honorable Councilmember Nelson Yang here to testify.
Councilmember, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, Chair Lee and members of the committee. I'm City Council Councilmember Nelson Yang. I'd like to say a big thanks to Representative Jean for carrying this bill. I represent the Greater East Side neighborhood of St. Paul, where the former Hillcrest Golf Course is located, and I'm here today with Mati Hillman, Senior Vice President of Sustainable Development at the St. Paul Port Authority, which is the owner of the site. The Port Authority's mission is to build a tax base, create and retain jobs in St. Paul, and advance equitable and sustainable development. I support their efforts to manifest that mission at the Hillcrest site. The opportunity at Hillcrest is the redevelopment of the former 112-acre Hillcrest golf course, a contaminated brown field. The City of St. Paul spent the past 2 years doing community engagement, land use planning, and technical analysis to create a master plan that is now working its way towards a May 2022 City Council approval. The master plan sets the stage to deliver much needed jobs, housing, infrastructure, green space, and tax base. The base infrastructure budget for the site is $46.9 million. One of the challenges of the site is the extensive grading and remediation. We're asking for $12 million in the bonding bill of the $46.9 million cost. We've worked with MMB and have language approved to ensure bond uses are eligible, and they include the design, engineering, and construction of the public areas at Hillcrest, including public rights of way, parkland, wetlands, stormwater, and associated public improvements to further economic development. As for jobs, 420 infrastructure construction jobs can start building this summer with the grading and remediation of the site. A district energy system is being considered, which would add another 300 construction jobs and help us get closer to our goal for a carbon-free community. The following vertical development phase would bring an additional 1,810 union construction jobs as they build over $200 million of private investment. The vertical development will also get us to our goal of 1,000 living wage permanent jobs on site, focusing on light industrial operations. And this is really important because a third of our households make less than $35,000 a year. Therefore, it's critical we provide local living wage job opportunities with low barriers to entry and career pathways. And regarding housing, our goal is to bring 1,000 units of housing to the site, including varying levels of density and various levels of affordability. And lastly, regarding sustainability development, I'm excited the Port Authority is striving to develop Hillcrest as a carbon-free community and one of the first to be certified by the U.S. Green Building Council within LEED for communities at the platinum level. Open space is also a big part of the plan with a 5-acre city park and additional areas dedicated for a connected trail system, wetland restoration, stormwater management, and passive green space. Regarding our timeline moving forward, 2022 is focused on remediation and grading starting in August. 2023 includes roads and utilities and shovel-ready sites ready for groundbreakings in late 2023. I want to say thanks for your time, and Monty is here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Councilmember Yang. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the question for the bill author. Does any part of this site fall in the boundaries of the recent foolish rent control that was recently passed in St. Paul? And if the answer is yes, I've seen headlines that builders have stopped construction because of the recent rent control. And could we end up in a situation where the state pays for the cleanup, but then there aren't any builders interested in building such sites?
Representative Zhang or Mr. Hillman from the St. Paul Port Authority?
Thank you. Representative Lucero, that's a great question. I know that my colleague, Councilmember Yang, was a supporter of that initiation, so I'll defer to the city and Mr. Hillman to respond to you more adequately.
Mr. Hillman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucero, we know the city is kicking off a task force to look at the rent control issue with a focus on a potential exemption for new construction like many other cities around the country. And we do believe our development time frame lends itself to not beginning those housing construction projects until the issue has been addressed. We've got a couple of years of work to do before we're really ready for it.
Thank you, Mr. Hillman. Representative Zhang, any closing comments?
Thank you.
Next on the agenda and the final bill for the day is Representative Davids, House File 2631. Please proceed, Representative Davids. Representative Davids, you might be muted right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House File 2631. And Mr. Chair, I have two small amendments here on line 1.6. Changing the appropriation from $3.4 million to $3.9 million on line 1.15, changing from $3.4 million to $3.9 million. And Mr. Chairman, I have testifier Mark Bishop that would like to address this bill.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And then for nonpartisan staff to please note that technical amendment that Representative Davids have asked. Mr. Bishop, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Mark Bishop. I am the owner and operator and caretaker of Niagara Cave, New Harmony, Minnesota. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to present the proposal for the acquisition of Niagara Cave in the state of Minnesota, by the state of Minnesota. The reason for the proposal is because I'm going to be retiring here shortly in the next few years. I'll be turning 65 and old. I've been in contact with the State Parks Service over the quite a few years about this transition plan, and hopefully that we can make this come to fruition. In order to protect the natural resources for future generations to help the state of Minnesota find Niagara Cave worthy of protecting and preserving and incorporating into the state park system. Niagara Cave was discovered in 1924 and was opened to the public as a show cave in 1934, and has been visited by millions of people from all over the world through the years. It provides an excellent educational opportunity experience for the public to understand and appreciate the unique and sensitive karst geology of southeast Minnesota. Niagara Cave is in Fillmore County in southeast Minnesota near Harmony, and we have a great fit into the Forestville Mystery Cave Park system, which is only 20 miles away from Niagara Cave. This would allow utilization of the same management and staffing. We currently work closely with the state park system already. Don Ryan, the current Mystery Cave Park Manager, is a proponent of this acquisition, and she feels it would provide great potential for year-round programming and income for the state park system. Mystery Cave, the only other commercial cave in the state of Minnesota, cannot be open from mid-fall through mid-spring due to the fact that it's a bat hibernaculum. The bats cannot be disturbed during this time, so Niagara Cave would then become the wintertime educational programming location and provide education year-round for the programming that they currently use at the state park system there. It also would increase efficiency in utilizing their staff because currently Mystery Cave State Park has many part-time positions that they must have to rehire every spring. And if Niagara Cave and Mystery Cave were to be joined together, it would allow for full-time employment for these staff members and make it much easier for staffing throughout the year. Also, the DNR State Pike Trail extension is coming to Niagara Cave and is to be completed during the fall of 2022 or the summer of 2023. We're still working on the engineering part of it, but it's all been funded. And so Niagara Cave will serve as a great trailhead for this extension. Preservation and conservation of the cave would be the primary benefit of the acquisition of the state, as they would act as stewards of the cave, providing education for persons of all ages. Mystery Cave, Forestville Mystery Cave State Park is currently the only state park that I've been told that has a net positive cash flow. And Niagara Cave would only enhance this cash flow because we are also a positive, net positive cash flow business with over $811,000 worth of gross sales just in 2021. I think the cave would be a great asset. That is, Niagara Cave has received many national and state accolades from many news outlets and online travel sites. We, in 2016, we were voted number two cave in the United States by a Reader's Choice Award through USA Today. And in 2018, we were voted Niagara Cave as Minnesota's bucket list destination. In 2014, Niagara Cave was visited by a team of inspectors from the United Nations to evaluate the cave as a potential UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Mr. Bishop,
in summary, Niagara Cave would be, pardon me?
Can I have you wrap up, please?
Oh, yes. In summary, Niagara Cave would be a self-sustaining entity for the state park. We currently welcome 28 to 30,000 visitors every summer. And we have one of the most impressive waterfalls in the state of Minnesota in the cave, and also one of the most impressive subterranean waterfalls in the United States. That's it. Thank you for your time. Yep. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Representative Davis, any closing comments?
Yes, very briefly here. The bonding committee has toured this facility, and I think every member was quite impressed with it. And it would become part of Forestville State Park, Mystery Cave State Park, and Niagara Cave would be included. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And again, thank you, Mr. Bishop. We did come and tour the cave during the 2019 mini session down Winona as part of our stop with Chair Murphy's committee. And so really appreciate that. Members, real quickly, that ends our agenda for today. We will not be meeting on Tuesday the 15th. Our next meeting will be March 17th. And on the agenda will be projects for underserved communities. This meeting is adjourned.